Hey friends, I'm Alamin Abdul-Mahmoud. I'm the host of the new podcast, Commotion. If you don't know about us yet, well, we are your daily deep dive into the biggest stories coming out of the world of pop culture, art, and entertainment. And luckily, I'm not going to be doing it alone, okay? I'll be joined by some brilliant culture writers and thoughtful superfans. We're going to have hilarious hot takes. We're going to have vibrant debates. Consider this your invitation to join the group chat. Get in here and join us. Commotion, available weekdays on CBC Listen.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hello, I'm Matt Galloway, and this is The Current Podcast. Across this country, municipal elected officials say they are dealing with abuse, a lot of abuse. And Pierre Leroux, the mayor of Russell, Ontario, is calling it quits.
And I had people calling me saying, you know, not death threats, but essentially saying, well, I hope you die because you, what you guys are doing. And it's that kind of negativity where we say, you know, maybe enough is enough.
Pierre Leroux, turns out, is not alone. In the rural municipality of Armstrong, Manitoba, 4 of the 5 councillors quit earlier this month. They blame a toxic work environment. In Quebec, 10% of local officials have left their jobs since the election in 2021. And the wave of resignations prompted the province to set up a mental health hotline specifically for elected officials. We have 3 people with us who know what it's like to be in office and face that sort of abuse. Jen Vasek is a city councillor in Waterloo, Ontario. Jasmine Meehan is a city councillor in Calgary. And Yunus Bukola is a borough councillor in Montreal. Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
Hello.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Great to have you here. Jen, let me start with why you're in this job. Why did you want to run for municipal office in the first place?
Well, I've been in office. This is my 2nd term now. I started 6 years ago. And the real reason why I wanted to run, well, there were 2. One was I really wanted to bring attention to the geographical distribution of poverty, which is that cities are built in ways where there are pockets of affluence and pockets of poverty. And so in those areas are resourced differently, with the lower income areas generally not having as many resources, for example, trees, as higher income areas. So that was one motivation, maybe the more altruistic one. And the second motivation was we had an incumbent who he'd been in for 4 terms, and I wanted to give him a real good competition.
And you thought you could make a difference?
Yeah. Of course.
What about for you, Jasmine? Why did you want to be involved in city council in Calgary?
Well, I had always been really fascinated with leadership and with government and wanting to make a difference. I think everyone feels that way. And I certainly noticed that there were not many younger people running for elected office. It was typically becoming a counselor was something in Calgary that was done later in life. And so I decided to put my name forward and became the youngest woman ever elected to Calgary City Council at age 31. And I think that's actually a really important perspective to have around the table because we have such a large stake in the future. And so something that I wanted to see more reflected, we're one of the youngest provinces in Canada and one of the most diverse cities. And so I think it's important that we have all perspectives around that table. And so that was part of my motivation.
Yunus, what about for you? Same question. Why did you want to run for office?
So I ran in 2017. I was 22 years old, and I grew up in the neighborhood where I ran for borough councillor. And a little bit like Jen, I'm pleased to represent a district where there's a lot of diversity in terms of social, economic, but also in terms of immigration. So I think I was the good person to be the voice of that, of, let's say, the families that coming to Canada to build a better future, but also to have a better equity in term in the district in Lachine.
So one of the reasons why we wanted to talk to you 3 was because of what it's like in 2024 to do a job like this, a very public job, a job that's public facing, but also where you interact with people on possibly really sensitive issues. The Canadian Municipal Barometer does this annual survey of mayors and councillors across the country in something like 400 municipalities. Take a listen to what they heard when they asked about harassment from the public. This is the principal investigator of that survey, Jack Lucas.
About 2/3 of mayors and councillors report experiencing belittling language or insults on social media. And about 1/3 report experiencing the same kind of belittling language in public events.
Jasmine, are you surprised by those numbers? 2/3 and 1/3. That seems like an awful lot.
No, not at all. I mean, on social media is one thing, but we are sitting in public hearings this week. And just yesterday, a gentleman said, if you don't vote the way that I think you should vote on this, it'll be like the French Revolution, and there will be beheadings, and the guillotine will come down. Mm-hmm. And so, like, there are threats abound. And, you know, the mayor stepped in and said, sir, are you sure that's what you mean to say? And you know, he qualified the statement eventually and said, no, I don't mean that you're actually going to be beheaded. I mean, electorally, we're going to behead you. But things like much less direct are said. And then more serious things happen. I mean, in January in Edmonton, there was an active shooter who went into City Hall with 150 rounds of ammunition. And luckily, no one was hurt. But these types of things are increasing, and they're not surprising.
Jasmine says this, and Jen, I could hear in the back of the conversation, you were agreeing through your voice. In your job and in the interactions that you've had, what sort of experiences have you faced when it comes to toxic behavior from members of the public, the people that you're serving?
Yeah, I've had it both personally and publicly, for sure. Personally, I've received text messages about things like early in my term, my first term, about leaf collection and someone dissatisfied with leaf collection and just using all sorts of names I get. But this person in particular used just the most derogatory comment I'd ever heard someone use towards someone else in a nasty way. I can't say it on the radio.
I mean, leaf collection sounds like a pretty benign issue. Apparently not. Well,
it's so contentious.
But it set somebody off, right?
It's yes, and it is interesting that it is these sort of, and that's what it is. Municipal politics is about the things you can, and lots of people have said this, the things you see at your driveway and not necessarily beyond. So it's those things that really strike a chord with people and can get people really, really frustrated. I don't know if you've seen the Samara Center for Democracy. They've done a number of research projects, but recently they did one on the Toronto election mayoral by-election in 2023. And they found a few different things that I think are important. One is that a small amount of people do the most amount of abuse or harassment. But then people face increasing abuse online in particular if they post any LGBTQ plus content. Mm. And the two times I've received the most vitriol online were both posts about LGBTQIA plus communities. And the second one actually was I had a whole bunch of anonymous trolls, anonymous to me at least. But one person who lives just around the corner from me also chimed in on it and effectively alluded to the idea that I was a groomer and really negative. And it was a celebratory post about Pride Month. You know, read the books, eat the cupcakes. My kids and I had just picked up some rainbow cupcakes from Sobeys, and we were celebrating Pride Month.
And you know who this person was?
He's a neighbor that's, you know, lives 5 minutes away, and it's more than uncomfortable. And you know, as an elected official, you need to kind of be on all the time when you're in public. But you shouldn't feel intimidated to go out and about. I'm not concerned about my safety with this person, but I do feel intimidated and I feel uncomfortable. And it's changed some of my behavior about how I engage and interact in my neighborhood.
How so?
I mean, a very specific example is I used to jog by his house and now I don't jog by his house anymore.
Hmm. Because of what he said.
Yeah. And it's not just me. I'll make this the last point about this. It's not just about how it affects me, but when people see those comments on my social media posts, when they are from those communities, it also has negative repercussions for people who are trying to live their lives safely just as who they are.
Yunus, what about for you? What have you seen?
Well, I lived quite an experience at the first mandate. I was going in an event. And someone just come and say, hey, are you my borough councillor? I live at this area and everything. He said, yes, I'm your borough councillor. What can I do for you? He said, well, I have a question for you. From what race are you from? I was like, you mean which country I was born? Well, I was born in Morocco. I came here at 1 year old. I went to the primary school, secondary school in their neighborhood. So is that your question? He said, no. What's your religion? I said, my religion. I said, well, I'm Muslim. He said, okay, never mind. And he just left. And I was with my other colleagues and I looked at them. I said, did that just really happen? The guy literally, he's a voter, right? He's in my district. He asked me from which race I am. And after he said, okay, no, you're Muslim. Okay, nah, never mind. I don't want to talk to you. I was like, whoa.
What is the impact of that? I mean, you tell the story and you can sort of laugh about it. I mean, in a rearview mirror sort of way. But what's the impact of that on you?
Honestly, for me, you know, I grew up in Lachine where there weren't a lot of immigrants. So I'm used to people like asking questions and like in a way that they're not totally, let's say, today we consider it like microaggression, but you know, sometimes they don't know. They're like, hey, from which race are you? I understand the person want to say like from which country for. So I try to, you know, a lot of pedagogy, you know, I use it that time to like trying to educate the person in front of me, because municipal politics is also a popular education too. I felt like when I was younger in the primary school, when people were asking, where are you from? And are you linked with, because it was in 2001, let's say, and it was, are you linked with Iraq and bin Laden, you know? So I felt like it was like bringing back some, let's say, bad memories from my primary. But I always laugh about it because that's the... We say kill them with kindness. Mm. I don't know. So for me, that's the way how I take things, you know. So
some of this is face to face. Some of this is online. And I just wonder, I mean, Jen, this is your second term?
Yes.
How have you seen things change? We talk now about the toxicity of things like Twitter, X, whatever it's called now, the social media interactions that we have. Have you seen things change over the time that you've been in elected office?
I had given some thought to that before I came onto council, and I don't know if it's changed in terms of the tone or the increased toxicity, or if we're just using social media and online forums so much more because we just started using them more in the pandemic. And so it's a really hard question for me to answer. I'm using social media lots more than I did in the first council term, or at least I'm on it a lot more, just scrolling like many people.
Do you read the comments?
Very infrequently. Mm-hmm. Unless there's a lot like was on my post. And so I think even if it hasn't increased, I think we're engaging so much more. So it feels like it's increased anyhow, because we're there more, seeing more.
What about for you, Eunice? I heard you in the background. Do you read the comments? Are you on social media? Do you feel like you have to change your behavior on social media because of some of the things that people would say to you?
Absolutely. I mean, I used a lot social media during my first campaign. So I was answering people online and everything. I was only a candidate, right? So after when I was elected, I was continuing I was responding to people like, I don't know, they were saying, hey, it's there's still garbage outside and this and that. And I was going to the public administration. They said, Eunice, they have to fill the form. They have to be in the system. You know, Facebook is not a system that we use to run the city, you know. So it's, and at that moment, I realized, and all the negative comment, I was feeling that I was feeding like a monster, you know, like the more I give them answers, the more they come back to me with like, yeah, but that one is not done. And oh no, my street is not done. So I'm like, if I start with that, I'm never going to be able to do my job, which is give the public orientation, politic orientation to the administration. And after be close to the people, try to teach them, or at least to make them understand the decision. And they can, you know, they can disagree with me. I have no problem with that. But at least that's for me the way to do politics, is to talk to the people and say, oh, you don't agree with my decision? tell me why.
Hello, I'm Jess Milton. For 15 years, I produced The Vinyl Cafe with the late, great Stuart McLean. Every week, more than 2 million people tuned in to hear funny, fictional, feel-good stories about Dave and his family. We're excited to welcome you back to the warm and welcoming world of The Vinyl Cafe with our new podcast, Backstage at The Vinyl Cafe. Each week, we'll share two hilarious stories by Stuart, and for the first time ever, I'll tell you what it was like behind the scenes. Subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts.
Jasmine, how do you operate on social media? Because constituents will see this as a way to have direct contact with their elected officials. And some of that can be good and some of it can be really toxic and nasty, as we heard. How do you operate on social media?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to interact a little bit more than I do, but I've had to, for my own mental health, take a little bit of a different approach. And I think, you know, the Trump era was the start of it. It was a permission slip to say quite extreme things. I think the algorithm is very self-affirming, and people are seeing the types of content that they want to see, and it's a bit of an echo chamber. And then the pandemic, I think, broke things a little bit further, and then certainly there's less moderation on X right now than there has ever been. One of my colleagues has an impersonating account that's using her name and face, and you just can't get it taken down. And so in order to kind of continue doing your job and being able to show up and do this work, I have to look at it very seldomly and have my team, and I'm very lucky to be in a major city where I have support with staff to help me be able to have the conversation but not look at all the vitriol.
Can you block constituents? Is that allowed?
So we've been advised by our ethics advisor not to do that. And there was some precedent recently that came out. I can't remember exactly what province that said that elected officials should not be blocking constituents, and it didn't seem to matter, you know, how abusive they might be being.
What do you think is going on? What's happening now that would lead to this sort of environment? And I mean, you've kind of hinted at it a little bit, Jasmine, in terms of bigger, you know, global political issues and when it comes to the lack of moderation, perhaps on a social media site. But more broadly, what has led to a place that we're in where municipally elected officials feel like they got to get out? As I said, in Armstrong, Manitoba, 4 out of 5 councillors quit because of a toxic work environment. Jasmine, what do you think is happening?
Well, I think it's, you know, a constellation of factors all coming together. And I think the other reality is that most municipal elected officials are not paid a full-time wage, and it's more than full-time work. I mean, I'm very lucky to work in a major city where I am paid a full-time wage, but the compensation relative to stress, particularly in smaller municipalities, where not only are you not going to have the sort of salary to keep you going, but you're also not going to have the same resources and staff support it. I think that eventually you just ask yourself, you know, I could probably be making more money for less stress doing something else. And so I think we are really need to think about that. And I don't think it's as simple as just paying people more. Like, I think the tone and tenor of this job has to change, but certainly moderate, reasonable, thoughtful people can do that type of work elsewhere.
What do you think? I mean, part of this is the larger environment that we're in. In Calgary, for example, there was recall legislation that could have recalled the mayor. What does that do to the environment when it comes to how people see their elected officials?
Yeah, I think it's really frustrating. I mean, Alberta instituted recall legislation. I believe we're the only province that has it. It's quite common in the U.S. and there's no parameters around it. And so you can just be recalled for any reason. And it's being used right now as a way to sort of drag people's reputation through the mud. I mean, if people don't like your policies, they can vote you out in the next election. But recall is something that can be, people just pay the fee. I think it's about $500 to recall an elected official. And, you know, there doesn't have to be proof of gross negligence or, you know, an abuse of office. They could just recall you because they just don't like you, or because you're a woman, or because of any reason. And so with that type of thing looming over you, I mean, there's a gentleman in a smaller municipality in Alberta who they're allowing a homeless shelter to go forward, and he campaigned on that. He was elected on that, and he's being recalled by the people who just still don't want the homeless shelter. And so it's actually getting in your way of being able to govern. And it also is a struggle for your family. I mean, if you have people that love you and care about you and care about your family name, it's hard to see people come after you like that all the time.
Mm-hmm. Jen, what do you think is going on in society broadly that would lead to what you've described and what we've heard from others?
Well, I think everything Jasmine had said is right on. The other thought I had while she was talking was just that we've moved from a society that thinks about the collective good to a more individualistic society over time. And if we are thinking about ourselves more than we're thinking about the collective good, we're thinking about, I think that's what it is. I think it's that we've moved to think about ourselves, our individual needs versus the collective good. And if we're thinking about the collective good, I think we're less likely to be behaving in toxic ways. And toxicity is the intention to be harmful or hurtful. Whereas when we're thinking about the collective good, we're thinking about how to be constructive, how to critique people in a constructive way. And the idea behind that is providing feedback so we can improve things for ourselves, for our families, for our communities, and for the world more broadly. And so I like to think that I'm accountable to that kind of constructive criticism that's meant to build a stronger collective society, and not the toxicity that's really, I see it as very self-focused.
What would you say, you said constructive criticism, what would you say to a constituent who would say, you're in public office, you need to develop a thicker skin?
I would say I am a human, and I have feelings, and I absolutely ought to be accountable to constructive criticism. It's the only way that we're going to move forward if we're willing to hear one another's ideas and build off of those and change our opinions and ideas, something that social media works against, like Jasmine said earlier. So I would remind them that I am a human and that it is my responsibility to be accountable to you and to let you know why I've made the decisions that I've made, and that I have also a responsibility to be constructively critical and not to be toxic and intentionally harmful online or otherwise. And that as humans, I hope that you understand that I have also a family. And when people are toxic or just absolutely nasty or derogatory to me, that impacts me for the rest of the day. Also something Jasmine said. And that impacts my family, and that impacts how my kids do at school, and it goes on and on. And so I guess ultimately to remember that we're all humans who got into this for the right reasons. Mm. I hope people believe that. And that I hope we can move forward together.
Yunus, what does it tell you in this context that the province has set up, the province you're in Quebec, has set up this mental health hotline for elected officials so that people have a way to deal with some of the abuse that they get, but also perhaps to cope with what they're getting? What does it tell you that has been created?
Well, one thing is that we know there's a big issue, and it's not normal to have almost 10% of official elected in Quebec that gave up in the middle of the 4-year mandate, you know. So actually there's now discussion with the Union of Municipalities of Quebec, with the Minister of Municipal Affairs of Quebec, to give less space for citizens that are just being nasty to be nasty, you know, because I don't know about my colleagues there, but most of the time we have like more than 80% of the time, it's always the same people asking the same question. And and other people, like when I'm speaking with my friends and I'm saying, I'm in municipal politics, they look at a council, a borough council, a municipal council, they say, is that really that your job? Like, it's not, you know, it's not, why do you do that, you know?
Why do you do it? I mean, that's a question that I think a lot of people would ask. Why would you stay in something?
Because
like
that aspect of the public council, public council and everything, it's only one aspect that people see. That's the thing. We don't see all the background work before we go to vote and publicly take the citizen question. And that's the thing. And I don't know about my colleagues, but mostly we're really proud because we do all the work before voting.
Let me just ask you both, Jen and Jasmine, that question. I mean, why, in the face of this, in the face of that sort of abuse, why do you stay there? Do you think, Jen, that this would impact your future as a city councillor?
I think there's all sorts of things that influence mine and other people's decisions to run for council again. And I think that kind of toxicity and on social media or in emails, on phone, in person is a small part of the job. It has a big impact, but it's a small part of the job. I definitely think that it plays a part in the decision to run again. But again, like Eunice said, it's such a rewarding job. I've learned so much about the community. I feel I'm the oldest panel member here, and that is uncommon for me in political spaces at 41. And I was 35 when I first got in. And so having started a little bit earlier as a councillor at 35, I feel so invested in my community at an earlier age. And I think that that's going to last until I die. And my kids are invested in the community because I am. And I feel like I've made a difference at the city. And people have said that to me. People do also say nice things to us as well. Mm. They just don't always say it online. Mm. And so I think we have to remember that as well.
Jasmine, last word to you. Do you worry that what we're talking about, Jen said you all got in it for the right reasons. Do you worry that people won't get in a job like this because of the toxicity they could face?
I do worry about that, but I'll just say respectful democracy is worth fighting for. And so we have to keep going.
Mm-hmm. I'm really glad to talk to you all about the work that you're doing. Thanks. I mean, putting yourself out for public life is a big step, and it has consequences and it has sacrifices. So thanks for doing that. But also thanks for talking to us about what it's like to do this job in 2024.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Matt.
Jen Vesic is a city councillor in Waterloo, Ontario. Jasmine Meehan is a city councillor in Calgary. And Eunice Boucla is a borough councillor in Montreal. Your thoughts on this? Welcome. If you have been in office, if you're in office, if you've run for office, if you've left office because of what you faced, email us, thecurrent@cbc.ca.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.